Well, it is the last day as we're recording this of August, and we're heading into the first day of September, and that means we're heading into another brand new edition of Main Street Magazine. We welcome Thorin Christendotter with us this morning. Good morning, Thorin.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. And you know what? I don't know how many people will miss the connection of your Main Street Magazine cover to, of course, a famous Beatles photo many, many years ago. But you know what? That was a great street to do this on.
We've had this idea for almost a year, and we finally were able to put it together and execute it, and I'm really thrilled with it. But you know, anyone who's a Beatles fan will immediately get that, even though it's not the big zebra walk that they had. But you know, bringing it forward to modern life with the rainbow crosswalk in Great Barrington, and kind of having the three main people, you know, me and my two employees, my right-hand people at Main Street, you know, be in the crosswalk carrying Main Streets on Main Street. You know, it was kind of fraught with meaning for us. So I'm excited that it came out so well.
And if you folks don't know, just go back to the Abbey Road album and you'll see what we're talking about. But it came out perfect. And that almost was a perfect elevation street to shoot it on anyway. So Main Street Magazine is brand new, of course, the magazine and also online. And the first thing we'll talk about is a rather large artist profile. Here Comes the Sun.
Yes, CB, you know, he never ceases to amaze the artist that he interviews and brings to us. And this is quite interesting. Robert Adzema's work is all about sundials, and which is, you know, a niche within a niche within a niche. Yeah. And but it's fascinating to learn about his artistry and how he makes these sundials and where a number of them are and how he's created them. And they're all unique. So the photos don't even do them in any justice, but it's quite interesting.
Yeah, it's and sundials. Everybody learns about sundials, but they forget about them. But
yes.
the art, and there is an art. I know several people who have houses that have sundials built in their backyards or off to the side of the house. They really are. Once you learn about them, but to see them actually in action. It's kind of cool. It's almost like if you watch a field of flowers and the sun going up and going, flowers follow the sun. It's a great article and a large article. The next article under that is about keeping the land, Tamarack.
This is our monthly business feature by Christine, entrepreneur feature, whichever you prefer. And she interviewed Tim Bont, I hope I pronounced this correctly, Bontico of Tamarack Preserve in Armenia. And she talked to him all about how the preserve came to be and where it is today and the effects of it and even how, you know, the saying we're sick and tired of how COVID affected it. but how that business came to be and how it's run and, you know, the members and the facilities. And I mean, I drive by there twice a day. So, I was fascinated to like, oh, they do this and they do that there. And that's interesting how they manage, you know, this part of it. So I hope people find it interesting. And especially if they're into some of the things that they offer there, certainly they'll find it even more interesting.
You know, you've got a story that's really interesting because when I was growing up, and there were lots of local businesses. Those local businesses were in homes. They happened to be in
right.
towns. And people say, well, how do people make it in business years ago? Well, because they owned the property, they lived above it, and they were able to send their kids to college and everything. You've got a great story here, which is called You Get Everything, Buying and Selling a Business with Real Estate. And this is really a great story.
I'll certainly be, you know, sure to pass it on to Christine, but this is her monthly real estate feature. We had the idea because Leslie Ferhenghi from, Three Meadows and a Pony Vodka called me and said she's, you know, trying to sell her business. And so she was, you know, looking for input and if I knew of anyone and how to proposition that I put that out there. And she said, you know, you should do an article about that. You know, when folks are trying to sell their business and sometimes they have real estate, sometimes they have inventory and how that all works. So I spoke to Christine about it and she said, oh, that's an interesting angle. So what Christine did with this article is she kind of took the angle of, yes, you're selling a business, but it involves, you know, the real estate and how that factors into the business. And what she's done is she kind of breaks it down, you know, when you either sell to an employee or if you sell to the competition, or if you, you know, do it quietly and kind of go directly to people, or if you have an agency help you, you know, market it. So there's quite a bit involved in it. And she spoke to a few local folks who actually have done this in the past or are doing it now, or who are trying to sell a business with real estate, and how kind of all these little things factor into the sale of the not just the property, but the business as well. And that sometimes, you know, what the evaluation is then in return.
Well, they're two totally different things. When you sell a business, you're selling basically a list of people that come to you and your and the wares that you have on hand and stuff like that. And then if you lease a place, well, of course you're not gonna, but if you own the business and you own the building that it's in, that's really a total separate transaction.
It is, and it's you know, it's kind of complicated. You know, one of the examples she uses in the article is the movie house in Millerton. Yeah. You know, of course, if you sell that business, it's nothing without the facility. It's nothing without the property. Whereas other businesses, even like my business, you know, being in the magazine business, you know, if I own the property, it doesn't really have anything to do with the business. I could, you know, we could be located anywhere, but there are certain businesses that are certainly very dependent on their, you know, real estate and where they're located. So, you know, it's kind of multifaceted.
You know, well, it's the same thing with the radio station. When you're a radio station and you have transmitter locations around the place and you own a building, it all doesn't go in one deal when you buy it or when you sell it. There's multi-deals because there's plenty of money to be made by the lawyering community. But, it's interesting when you look at that. The way, you know, in the old days, back when I was young, like I said, most businesses that had inventory and stuff like that, when they sold the businesses, they sold the business with the house and everything like that. It's not that way now at all. Now, I don't know whether this is timing or just plain dumb luck, but on the resignation of Andrew Cuomo of being governor of New York, you have a story on Tara Sullivan, who's the first female who led the New York State Bridge Authority.
Indeed, and actually when Catherine wrote this article and submitted it to me, it was days before Cuomo you know, left, so I had to go in and add in now former Governor Cuomo. So I'm happy that, you know, that happened, so I was able to put that in so it's correct. But Tara is an incredible person, and I'm so happy that we were able to share this piece and her story and her successes in the Bridge Authority, and just to explain how she got to where she was and what she did for New York State and for the Bridge Authority in New York State, and for the Hudson Valley in particular, and her achievements and accomplishments and her time, you know, in this office.
All right. And even though we're just going into September in this issue, you do have an article, Cold Comfort, Your Old House Can Achieve Coziness with Savings with Affordable New Products.
Well, winter's not that far away.
No.
So Lori has been looking into these things and working on it, and she, you know, uses her own house as an example of what she bought an old house, and their first year it was just, she found it astounding, the heating costs, and so she learned a few things and decided to share them with us, you know, for those who are in similar shoes, and I'm sure with the last year or two with, you know, all the new homeowners around here who may or may not be experienced with old houses. There are solutions, and so for those looking for that, you know, it's a good quick read, and there's some helpful tips in there.
Well, to go along with that, a couple of years ago, the town, because we, of course, rented the building from the town that we're in, the town really did. They put a new roof on, painted it, but they also did an audit to see about insulation and found out that there was no insulation on the outdoor walls of this building. Well, after they did that, our heating and cooling costs dropped easily, if you combine them together, by about 35-40%, even with raises in prices. And that made a huge difference for us, not only money-wise, but in comfort-wise. There's no cold zones in the building.
It's, you know, some of these old buildings, it's really treacherous. And, you know, like in my office, my one outer wall is a brick wall, and we've struggled with heat in there. And I just know the propane prices and the oil prices, you know, it's pretty astounding how, you know, and if you, there's no insulation in the ceiling, so it, you know, the heat just goes up in the winter, and it's, it was hot in the summer. So insulation can make the, like you said, it's not just, you know, the cost, but it's the comfort factor.
I'll show you how bad it was here. We have a set of pocket doors, two sets of pocket doors that go to an office, right? And they were blowing in the insulation. And guess what? The insulation was coming right through the pocket doors into the building.
Oh my God! Really?
That's how old. That's how old the building was, and how. So we just had to tape it up, and then they finished it. But it's a great story for anybody. And I want to wrap up with your today. Nothing is impossible to her who will.
This is Griffin has continued now with our political profiles, where we've gone around and, you know, he's interviewed folks in our tri-state area who are in various political positions, and we're fortunate to have been able to connect with so many. And this time, he speaks with Senator Daphne Jordan, in who represents, I think it's the 43rd district, if I'm not mistaken, of New York, and tells kind of her story, and was able to ask her some interesting questions. And you know, as I've shared with you before, when we decided to start these kind of, as we call it, political profiles, but it's more people profiles. You know, I didn't want to get into, you know, this person's on the right, this person's on the left, this is their angle, but to kind of profile them as a person and who they are, where they came from, and how it is that they came to be in the position they are, and why they decided that, and why it is that they feel how they feel about certain things, you know, that impact the community that they represent. And I think Griffin's done a fantastic job time and time again with these profiles of, you know, sharing that about these individuals who represent a lot of us. And I hope that helps, you know, when it comes election time, that people know them a little better.
Well, I think what people, when they look at this, they realize you're not looking at these people as a Republican, a Democrat, an independent, liberal, or conservative. You're looking at the human side of them. That's the great thing about it. It's just happens to be a profile that somebody who's a leader, a town leader, in either running the town or being part of the town. So I think those profiles are great, because it really strips away all the stuff that should be stripped away, especially in local hometown politics.
Exactly. We have enough of he said, she said, and, you know, they're arguing this and that and the, you know, national news, and we don't want to do any of that. We just want to talk, you know, about the community and the people who are in the community who may impact our lives. So, you know, when it comes time to for us to make a decision about for us and our families and our futures, that when we go to the polls, we know a little bit about our candidates.
All right. That's Main Street Magazine on your newsstands out there, wherever you get it for free, but also their companion, MainStreetMag.com. Thorne, we'll speak to you again next week.
Sounds good. And the magazine just arrived yesterday, so give us a day or two to finish all our deliveries.
Okay. Take care, Thorne.
You too. Bye-bye.
Main Street Magazine here on Robin Hood Radio. You can find Main Street Magazine once again on the web, mainstreetmag.com. And you can find this on our on-demand page, robinhoodradio.com. Click on On Demand. Click on Main Street Magazine.